This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I'm Alex Kurtzman.
And this is Bob Orsi.
So I think the big question, of course, is what was it like to walk around Comic-Con with a Transformer paper cutout on your head?
Busted.
It was great. It was fantastic.
Did you do that for more than like a minute, or was it like the whole time?
No, I wore it for a good afternoon, right?
I did, yeah. He walked
from about noon to 4 o'clock on Friday.
On Friday. Saturday.
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 Yeah, I was impressed. It was impressive. Yeah.
Now, the two of you have probably reached a point with fandom that people actually know who you are. Were you stopped at all, or can you be anonymous at Comic-Con?
We can be pretty anonymous, but oddly enough, somebody that I work with thought it was me, but then thought, nah, he would never have a hat on. So they didn't stop
me. So he was not recognized by people who know him, and then recognized people who don't, so...
That's kind of funny. Because Comic-Con just happened, you guys are obviously geeks, just like me, and everyone who's going to be reading or listening to this interview. What's the shit that you geeked out over at Comic-Con this year? What's the stuff you walked around the convention floor and wanted to buy? You know, what was that thing that you really wanted or got?
Well, for me, I always have to buy a little Star Trek paraphernalia. I got a shirt, got a skirt for my wife, red, Star Trek. Can't wait to see it. What else? Got a couple comics, like got a couple just random things I had no idea about, just impulse, like saw it, the right person said, hey, get it, and I grabbed it, you know, just a random sampling. You got a bunch of toys for your son, didn't
you?
Yeah,
this is my son's first trip to Comic-Con. So here, look, this is my, there he is, Wolverine, right at the legs of Optimus Prime.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So my shopping was all for him. Although Bob did tip me off to the remote control air sharks. Did you see those?
The which ones?
Remote controlled air sharks that were flying around.
I did not see these.
Oh, man. That's the coolest thing I saw.
That has to be a different experience for you with a son walking around Comic-Con, though, taking in everything in a different way.
Well, he just couldn't believe it. He literally was like, it's the biggest toy store in the world. And
mixed with Halloween.
Mixed with Halloween. And he got stopped like 15 times by people who wanted to take his picture, so he was in heaven.
Yeah. That had to be very the opposite.
Yeah, nobody knew who I was, but man, they sure like my 5-year-old.
I was there with a paid escort, so we had a very different... No, I'm kidding. I was there with my wife.
That's very funny. I had a blast this year. I think that this year the con was the most women I've ever seen at Comic-Con was this year, which is a good sign for the industry,
sure.
I think. Jumping into why I'm actually talking to you guys today, it feels to me like it's been years that I've talked to you about this one project, and it's finally on the verge of coming out this Friday. I mean, it's been literally years. What, for people that have like heard about the movie, or maybe they're trying to stay spoiler-free, like I pretty much have been, what's like one thing you want to tell people, or one thing you want people to know about the movie that you think that they really should know, if anything? I'm putting you on the spot. I like
it. No, it's interesting to ask us, like, what should they know about a movie that says so much in the title? One of the first titles we've ever seen, its own log line, for Christ's sakes. And I guess I should know that we really were inspired by the Western, and that mixing the sci-fi into it was a way to do a Western when Westerns have been... seeming less relevant until recently, thanks to True Grit and other things. Sci-fi allowed us to be more true to the Western than maybe even doing a literal Western could have been.
Strangely, I feel like the thing that was exciting to us about it is that it was kind of a gimmick-free experience for a title that could have ended up with a movie that was potentially so gimmicky. You know, we were surrounded by the keepers of the flame in both the Western and the sci-fi genre. And so we were never allowed to really deviate from the tone that it needed to be. And that was pretty remarkable because, you know, when you've modeled, you know, one of your characters after John Wayne and the Searchers, and one of your producers has actually been in a movie with John Wayne, you know that you're going to be kept on the right track, you know. And obviously with Steven, you know, and what he's been and done for sci-fi, having that around to make sure that we never deviated tonally from all the movies that we loved, all the sci-fi movies that we loved, was massive, you know. So I think we felt very protected in the bubble of, you know, the experience.
I am a huge fan of sci-fi, and I'm a huge fan of Westerns. Seems like mixing those two genres would be awesome. I'm really excited to see the movie tonight, sincerely. Could you sort of talk about the balance, and again, I haven't seen it yet, but talk about the balance of the footing of not stepping too much into sci-fi and not stepping too much into the Western, but managing, you know, and also, like, how realistic is the movie in, you know what I mean, in terms of the time?
Well, I think we were, we all agreed early on that we were making a Western first and a sci-fi movie second, and that that was the way to achieve the tone, was to ground the audience in a very real, very gritty Western, and to invade that movie literally with aliens. And we always used to say, it's like you're watching Unforgiven and then the aliens from Alien Land. And that was the tone we were going for, you know? And that...
And the point of view of the characters is they live in the Old West, so naturally to be true to them has to prescribe a slightly Western point of view. We can't suddenly break the rules of the Western to go into a sci-fi movie. The sci-fi movie had to still fit within the Western.
Definitely, and you know, we always knew that the rubber was going to meet the road in the scene where the two genres collide, which happens at the end of the first act, and the way their brains, our characters' brains, process lights in the sky when they've never really seen electricity before. There's a lot of room there to go off the rails tonally. You know, you could go into Jokeville in 2 seconds right there. And I think that was one of the scenes that we wrote and rewrote and rewrote a trillion times, because the reaction had to maintain the level of, you know, aspired grace and everything that we're going for and what we were trying to achieve with the Western at that point. So it was great. And, you know, also we had actors who took it extremely seriously. You know, Harrison does not mess around when it comes to, you know, the Western genre, which is a genre that he is beloved to him, and it's the, you know, he's wanted to do one for a long, long time. And, you know, Daniel also helped ground us in such a perfect way, because he's our entry point into the movie, and he is literally the man with no name. And uncovering the story of why he has no name and how that relates to the alien story was part of what attracted us to the idea of the movie.
You guys were obviously on set a bunch, a little. I'm not exactly sure the percentage.
We produced the movie and
a lot. Yeah. We were there the whole time.
That's what I kind of thought. Talk about, obviously you guys had rehearsals, you had read-throughs, then you're on set and you're dealing with the actual in-location. How much did things possibly change at all on set? And could you sort of talk about, you know, working with Harrison Ford and how much was he shifting or adjusting?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, there has to be a level of, like, you know,
totally.
This is Harrison
Forget
Ford.
It. Absolutely.
We spent a lot of time before we were even shooting with all of our actors as they were cast, and spent, you know, weeks with some of them just going through the script and just going through mining everything we could get more out of the character. And, you know, in a way, the part expands, and then as you get to the set, what happens is then it contracts again to its most essential points. But now it's been simmering in the sauce of all the details that you talked about, that maybe we can get to that one experience that we talked about, that character might talk about by the campfire. But, you know, now we don't have the campfire scene. That's okay, because we built up the characters and tailored it to these actors. You know, you want to have it to be as specific as possible. With Daniel, who we found out can do so much more with less, you know, he's so good with his body language and his facial expressions that he could express a lot of stuff. He could actually lose some of his lines and just have him play it kind of physically. So everyone got that. We got that experience with most of our actors. And structurally, though, the movie never really changed.
No, it didn't really. I think we had, even though we had a release date and, you know, the pressure of our shooting schedule, we had the luxury of time. I mean, we did spend a good month just sitting in a room with Harrison and Daniel and Olivia, and just went through the script, you know, and plotted out character
and John,
arcs. And John, obviously. And plotted out character arcs all together and talked about what we wanted to achieve and how to get there. And, you know, there were details, a lot of details that we had already put in the draft before they signed on based on a draft, and they liked the details. So it's really just a matter of expanding on them.
You guys have worked on a lot of different things. Did you find that this was the project that you had the most friends say, I kind of think I want to visit you on this one?
Yeah,
for sure.
There were a lot of visitors. Finally, by halfway through the shoot, Dennis Stewart, our, you know, production manager, was like, all right, when we get to the ravine, this sort of thing, I'm going to institute a no visitors rule. All right, nobody can come in. Like, I've had enough visitors.
Yeah. No, I mean, we were in awe of the cast that ended up coming into the movie from the beginning. So, you know, all of our friends wanted to at least just be around
them. And it was a cool location. You're out at kind of like, it's almost like you're out there camping, you know.
It's a set visit that I wanted to go on very badly, just to see Harrison work like that.
Yeah.
I definitely want to ask you, though, you guys are involved, obviously, in other things. What's been your schedule, like, the last little bit since rapping on Cowboys? I would imagine you're finally able to look at the horizon or see all these other things, and, you know, could you sort of talk about that?
We had things to really... Not Alex has been finishing Welcome to People.
I directed a movie, so...
No, yeah. I'm getting to that.
No.
And, you know, while we're doing Star Trek on the side, and... gearing up for the new development season, plus Now You See Me, we're putting together. We're in soft prep on Ender's Game, so that we don't see anything. we don't see any horizon.
Yeah,
we're like veal in a box. No.
I was going to say running a website, a little bit similar.
Right.
But not sure. Even, but a different kind of level. Let's definitely talk about the film, though. When are people going to see... Like, the first images, trailer, when is it being released?
You know, it's a different kind of movie in that there isn't...
You're talking about Welcome to People.
Yeah, yeah, it's not... Welcome to People is a family drama comedy. And so it's not like there's going to... I don't think there's going to be an image that... Like Cowboys and Aliens, where everyone's like, what does the alien look like? And what is Harrison going to look like in those... You know, what the alien going to look like in his chaps? It's not that kind of movie. I think that... I'm in the process of figuring that out with the studio now. Literally, I'm a month away from finishing post. So,
and then we'll figure. Now, when we all see it, then we'll know what's a good release day. We'll plan it around.
Yeah.
You know,
are you planning like to do any sort of film festivals with it? Or?
I'd love to. I mean, I think that it feels like the kind of movie that would thrive there. But it's been an unbelievably joyful experience from the minute I started. I mean, it's just been incredible. It happened very fast. It happened in the middle of Cowboys, very unexpectedly. So.
Well, the script didn't happen very fast.
No.
That only took us 6 years.
Yeah. Seven, actually.
But once somebody read it, it happened fast.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Once we got it out there, it happened quickly. But we did take 7 years to write it, which was also a new thing for us.
Six.
Yeah. Was it six or seven?
Between five and seven.
Yeah.
So the question is, could you see yourself like wanting to go to something like a Sundance with it? Or do you think that is...
Well, I think Sundance... Sure, although I think Sundance is more geared toward independent film, and it's not really an independent film.
I don't
film.
Even know if it's independent anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, Fox Searchlight releases their stuff there
sure.
all the time.
Sure, yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that kind of thing would be amazing. You know, it's always been my dream to go to Sundance, so it'd be pretty poetic.
I was going to say,
yeah.
It's like
yeah.
The movie's going to be done. Just throwing that out there. So basically, no word on when fans are going to be able to see anything from the movie yet.
I'm literally about to get into all those conversations with the studio about when they want to start releasing images and, you know, have things get out there. So
I definitely want to ask about Hawaii Five-0. That thing, like... sort of did pretty well in the ratings.
Yeah.
Just yeah. a little bit.
Here and abroad.
It worked out.
Yeah, it did.
That one was a successful reboot.
It was.
What was your reaction? Obviously, you put in some heart and soul into, you know, launching a TV property. You never know if it's going to do well.
Sure.
Whatever. What was your reaction when you found out what the numbers were after the pilot and what it continued to do through the first season?
Well, I think we were... CBS supported the show unbelievably well. From the beginning, I mean, even before we wrote the script with Peter Lenkov, like it was, they just were right there to support the show. They had such a clear vision of what they wanted to do with it, and
yeah, they were so behind it. As a result, it was I think our reaction when it came out was we weren't glib about it. It was a sigh of relief because we knew that they'd put so much great effort behind it and had actually such great marketing. And had given us every opportunity to make it good, that it
yeah.
was really going to be our fault
right.
if it didn't perform. So it was just a sigh of relief.
Obviously, how involved can you guys be with the schedule you have, or how involved are you in the show, or are you sort of like, just like overseers, if you will, like in the real high up rafters?
Well, Peter Lenkov...
Our motto is do no harm. That's our motto.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Wait, sorry, you were going to say?
I was going to say Peter Lenkov deserves unbelievable credit for, you know, guiding the show at this point. And we're there for, I mean, as we said to him from the beginning, we're there for him as much or as little as he needs us. So we, you know, we're still definitely involved in the show, but he's really running the day-to-day of it. He's the soldier in the trenches.
So if we hit a snag or something, we have to come in and break a story or take some writing. We can't, but we don't demand anything from the process other than what is helpful and good, you know. And at the beginning of the season, obviously, we get together, we plan what the season's going to be, we plan sort of what
broad
the
arcs.
Major arcs or the characters are going to be, So we're still involved in the DNA of the show, but the day-to-day running, Peter Lenkoff does a great job. He's a machine.
So the question is, how involved have you been in, say, season two? Do you know where the...
Yeah, still involved. Yeah, oh yeah.
So you guys know where... So for fans of the show, anything you want to tease, if you will?
You know, everyone really changes. Like, everyone is going to go through a... They're not where they were in season one. We managed in season one to, I think, have a good blend of standalone episodes and mythology for the year. And in season two, that keeps going and ramps up even more. There's a great... I don't know if I can give this away for Peter.
Don't give it away. Err on the side of caution.
Yeah. We're part of the fun of Hawaii Five-O is the idea of this destination that everyone wants to be at, and by the idea of the kind of the cool characters that exist in this place. It's a mix of the United States, but also a mix of kind of a Caribbean place. And so we have a lot of new cast coming in. A lot of it's been announced. We got Tom Sizemore coming in. We got Terry O'Quinn from Lost. So it indicates that we're finding a good balance story-wise between servicing our family of people, but also forcing them into different configurations with amazing cast. That's gonna, you know, these aren't the guest star of the week. You know, these are multi-episode arcs.
One of the things that I wish happened more on TV, and I know it's impossible with the schedule, and as a fan, having more crossovers between shows. And it's just one of these really difficult things to do. It's almost impossible. I look at Community and
I know, John. It's not 30 Rock. It's...
No. Oh my God, I'm like Kevin Beagle's show.
Parks and Recreation.
No.
Sorry, what are you thinking of?
The one on ABC, Cougar Town.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
They did that little Abed cameo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they connected.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really good shit.
That's cool.
I just butchered that thing, but you have the you're still like supervising producers, if you will, on Fringe. What are the chances of a Fringe live
crossover? Very slim.
People crossing.
Very, very slim.
I'm just trying to have a fun joke.
Well,
on this
you
one.
Know, we were having lunch the other day with Moonves and Murdoch. How did you even get them in the
studio? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, but what about? But you know what I'm saying? Do you, as a fan of TV, what do you think it's going to take to ever get more like Easter egg crossover kind of things, if at all? Or do you think it'll never happen because of contracts and networks?
And it's funny that you bring it up, because we found ourselves in a couple of conversations lately with other people going, how could we force crossover? So I think part of it is just everyone starting to want that again. But it's going
to
be hard.
But I think it'd be almost impossible to crossover shows from different networks. I don't know how that's going to happen.
It could happen if some.
But did that even happen when we were little? Wasn't it still always just like characters from different shows on the
Battle
same network?
Network stars, they're all on one
right,
network.
Right, but that's different. That's a game show.
Yeah.
I think personally you can do it if the network heads are like, okay, we'll give you get 10 minutes on the show.
Right.
You get 10 minutes.
Right.
You work it out however.
But then
that's
you're running the risk of promoting the other network potentially more than yours.
You know,
they'll never do it.
But I, as a fan, I think that would be something cool. Or even right. on like...
If, oh, as know, a fan, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I'm just throwing this
for
out
sure.
there. It's completely at left
we
field.
We should start a movement.
I'm bringing it up right now. I guarantee people will address, in the comments will say, hey, it's a good idea.
Yeah,
I think if
sure
we had the right kind of product placement that both crossed over between one of the Defense Department giants and propaganda, then... the propaganda arm of the parent companies, and I'm not saying any names. there was a confluence of that. I bet you we get a crossover.
I think 100% right. You guys are still listed as supervising producers on Fringe. Are you guys involved in the show at all, or is it? I mean, how's that working?
At the beginning of the year, it's what we call mini camp. Show up. Since this is year four now, we pitch as many dopey things as Alex and I can think of, and then we watch during the year and see if any of them were used.
Jeff Pinker and Joel Wyman are the ones who deserve all the credit for that show right now. They're the ones who are doing it.
It's one of my favorite shows on TV. I think it's exceptional stuff.
Yeah, they're doing an unbelievable job.
And that's a Bad Robot production, so we don't have... They have a lot of... Kathy Ling, who's been there from the beginning, Athena Wickham, you know, there's a whole team over there that handles the show really well and produces it very well.
Yeah.
Of course, just in case I'm going to run out of time, I'm going to just throw out, you know, the Trek 2 stuff. I spoke to Damon like 3 days ago, and he said that finally Trek 2 is like the number one priority for him, for JJ, for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So can you guys talk a little bit about what it's like to finally have it as your number one assignment?
Well, I think we all agreed early on, you know, the studio was bullish, and that's great, that's what you want, and set a date, and I think we all felt strongly that we did not want to make the movie if we didn't feel that we could match the enthusiasm and love that we brought to the first one. And to put the movie out just to meet a date would not have been the way to make the movie. I think we owe too much to the fans, we owe too much to ourselves to not do it that way. So we really wanted to take our time until we felt that we had a story that we could stand behind that we felt
was worthy
of the sequel.
And David was finishing Lost, and we didn't want to start without him.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just a matter of everyone lining up.
Not wanting to rush.
And wanting to clear out everything else, actually, a little bit. You know, that is, I guess that is the horizon, is that really is, like, as you said, our next mountain to climb.
We just didn't want to split focus.
And we're all geared up.
I'm going to curse on this one. I fucking love Star Trek, your movie. I love this film like nobody's business. I rewatched it at the Hero Complex Film Festival, and I just forgot how effing awesome it is. So let's just talk about, this has to be, though, for both of you, the one thing that everybody comes up to you and says, Star Trek.
Right.
Star Trek. I mean, like, what's it like for you to sort of have something that is so loved by so many people?
That's the greatest thing in the world.
You know?
It keeps your subconscious working on it even while you're sleeping. You know what I mean? I really think it does take that place in our minds sometimes, even no matter how many other things we're doing. And it keeps the pressure up in a good way. So that's why we're not going to do it unless we have the greatest story we ever thought of, you know.
Well, talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, like, writing for something like that, is it different for both of you? You mentioned you're thinking about it all the time, but are you sort of keeping, like, a notepad with you? Like, you're at the market, someone says something, it cues something, and you're writing it down. Or you sort of like, could you talk about your writing process for basic stuff and for Trek? Is it different? Is it the same?
Well, with Trek, we're such a part of a team on it, you know, in terms of this is a development that we share with Damon and JJ and Brian Burke. So, yeah, you do have to keep notes and remember your stuff because it's a band that when you get together to practice, you want everyone to have done their homework a little bit. You know, so as opposed to when it's just me and Alex who are in an office every day, usually, you know, before this year anyway.
But it is different in the sense that, you know, like when we wrote the first movie, JJ was only a producer. He wasn't going to direct the movie, so we weren't really writing. I mean, we were writing to get JJ. Our secret goal was to get him to do it, but he hadn't committed to the movie, so we weren't
recording together
exactly all the time. Whereas, like, on Transformers with Michael, it was a lot of day-to-day back and forth with Michael, so he was more infused in the process. And so I think that it's a little bit like that.
Everyone's different. Every project's different. However, the fan pressure on Trek is something that is, I think, unlike any other
project.
For sure,
absolutely.
And that's what keeps us making sure that we...
That's why we didn't want to rush it.
Yeah, that we are taking all the information culturally, because it is a cultural icon that does require a couple of different hats that other movies don't require.
It's also what, you know, when we were first approached about doing the first one, we said no, and it took us a year to say yes, because for all the same reasons, we did not want to mess it up, and I think we feel the same responsibility on two, and now even more so, actually, because expectations were low on one, you know, and we just didn't know what, you know, no one really knew what it was going to be. Now everyone's waiting for it to, you know, to match what they felt about the first one, so there is added pressure.
3D seems to be an ever-growing kind of... It's ever-growing. What are your guys' thoughts on 3D? And, you know, obviously I'm sure you guys maybe have talked about Trek in 3D. What are your thoughts on the format?
Gives me a headache unless it's animated.
I think it's great when you have time to design your story thinking around it. You know, but I think if it's just a matter of like, hey, we can throw more things at the camera, I tend personally not to be as much of a fan.
Personally, I think the animated movies in 3D are amazing.
Right. Exactly.
And that some of the live action recently have gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just curious.
You know what? I bet the technology will get better and better, and it'll be a harder choice to decide. You know, but right now it is still cumbersome. It's still unbelievably expensive, and some movies wouldn't be able to get made if it was just going to be in 3D, and some movies shouldn't be made in 3D. in the vistas that we were going to have in Cowboys and Aliens. Right now, with the technology, my understanding is past 50 feet or 100 feet, you're suddenly losing this effect. And so, in a way, you're trading that thing for the feeling of film and for seeing a real classic movie and seeing a natural environment. You know, it was a debate we had on Cowboys and Aliens, and we wanted to keep it, again, pure to its classic roots.
We didn't feel like it was actually as true to story as we wanted it to be. So at the end of the day, I think we decided that John certainly decided as a filmmaker that he was more interested in the 2D version, and that's kind of all we need to hear. Because the last thing you want to do is force a filmmaker to do something just to make money. You know,
I'm glad you didn't do it in 3D.
Yeah.
So the question, of course, is: are you thinking about Trek 2 in 3D, or is it sort of in the far off horizon?
I don't think we're thinking about 3D. At least I'm not thinking about 3D at this point. I'm just thinking about the story.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, that's. I'm sure there'll be. It'll be budgeted both ways, probably, and we'll be able to make an assessment there. But actually, we haven't even discussed that with our bandmates. I'm not even sure what.
Yeah, if there's a great reason to do it, and then it's certainly a conversation. But we're not thinking around 3D right now.
I definitely want to ask you about Ender's Game, but so real quick though, it seems to me that the release date of next summer for Trek 2 is just an impossible task. Can we all agree that it's going to be Christmas or the following summer?
Well, I think we're still having the conversation, is the truth.
So you guys think it could still reach next summer?
I think anything's possible. I mean, Transformers 2 was done in, post-strike 3 months from the beginning of the script to the first day of shooting. So anything's possible. But again, we have to take into account the spirit of wanting to do it right. So time is going to be a factor in that decision.
Ender's Game, what's the story? Let me rephrase. What's the status of that, and how is it going?
We are in the exploratory part of pre-production, where we have people working, we have designers, we have pre-realization, we have all that kind of stuff to help us figure out the exact budget. Is really what we're doing. We're budgeting it through R&D. We're in the research and development phase of what the movie's going to finally cost. But we're looking at scheduling, hopefully shooting in the new year.
Does it have any sort of cast attached yet?
Not yet. We had our first casting meeting today.
Wow, look at that. I'm curious about theme parks. If they ever came, this is going to sound bizarre, but like, there's a lot of rides happening for different properties. If they ever came to you for right now Star Tours is apparently the shit at...
Yeah, I heard it's amazing.
That's
everyone
is telling me, right? Yeah. So if they ever came to you for Universal said, we want to do a Star Trek ride like Star Tours, would you guys be down for something like that?
It's hard to deny... I remember seeing when they did the Terminator 3D ride, which was nothing had ever been done like that, and Cameron directed it, and it was exciting to him as a filmmaker to take on the challenge of figuring out how to make the experience go a step further. So if we had a great story, experiential reason to do it, then, it could be great. I wouldn't rule it out. Haven't thought about it yet. It's the first time we're thinking about it. But
we wouldn't write the crappy Star Trek ride, I'll tell you that.
Right.
It better be a cutting-edge experience for going after.
Yeah.
Speaking of my last question, since she's not back yet, the Star Trek video game is actually one of the things I haven't played a game in a while.
Very cool.
Did you play it?
Huh?
Did you play it?
I didn't go to E3 this year. I could have gone. I didn't go.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I wanted to know, how involved were you in the Trek video game? I heard you guys were both involved. And for fans, what should they be looking forward to about the game?
So, our company's very involved. Bad Robot's very involved. We want it to be... It has to have its own reasons for being. So the gameplay and what you do in the game has to have its own reasons without being called Star Trek. And the idea of genuinely character-based cooperative gameplay, that's role-playing and characters you love, is interesting. Story-wise, it currently fit within continuity of what we're doing. So it's not a remake of the first movie or a remake of any other movie. It's kind of an in-between step of what's happening in our Star Trek universe. So we have an amazing writer in it. We're just trying to bring the same approach to the movie, which is it has to have every reason to stand on its own. It can't just... Movie games don't normally adapt well, and we're mindful of that and wouldn't be going forward unless we felt we had addressed that.
So will it, in continuity-wise for canon, would it go first movie, video game, second movie?
Yes.
So for fans, they really do want to play the game. Or is it...
Or they're not real fans. I don't know, I don't know what's wrong with these people. By the way, like a good Star Trek fan, I buy every piece of crap that the Star Trek universe puts out. No, I'm kidding.
No.
But I have Christmas ornaments. I have a pizza cutter that's the shape of the Enterprise. I have a phone.
Did you buy the Master Replica Enterprise?
No, I haven't got that. Well, buy it? No, I got it for free.
Christmas gift. Okay, fine. So you do have it, though. You guys are obviously involved in a lot of TV. What are you... what's going on right now with like the for the next season? Are you guys currently...
We're just starting to think about it. We're literally just starting to think about it.
Which one?
You're talking about... Yeah, about
TV.
Oh, new like, stuff. New TV stuff. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
We're just
nothing announced right now, but we're looking at... Yeah, we're meeting every writer in town. We're looking through material, book scouts, article scouts, getting together every week, having our fun TV brainstorming session. Literally sit here just like this and go, what should we do?
What are the chances of you two ending up doing something on HBO?
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Because that's...
Oh, my God, that'd be the best.
I mean...
Yeah, that playground
is
amazing.
There's so many great cables...
Or fun Showtime.
Showtime's great.
FX.
Yeah,
so many
There's
great
so
cable
many,
stations doing
yeah,
such amazing
to.
Stuff.
Yeah, we
we're absolutely to. Looking at that as part of our development plan.
I was gonna say. I mean, I could see a lot of stuff going there. I know she's gonna kill me, so I'm gonna wrap.
Okay.
No worries, man.
Thank you so much.